desire y'all's prayers this evening. As always, my desire is to be able to get the thoughts the Lord has out. And I have a little thought this evening. What I've written on the board is clean the inside. My thought this evening is actually aimed at everyone, whether you're new to trying to live for the Lord, been living with the Lord for a while. Clean the inside. We need to take special note of it. There's scripture that talks about cleaning the inside, that, you know, that's more important than the outside. There's a cup of water here, made of plastic. Nobody can see the inside. Looks pretty good on the outside, doesn't it? But if inside this cup was leftover food and dried stuff from meals gone by, who would want to drink out of it? Even though it would look good on the outside. But at the same time, I know a lot of us men folk have worked on vehicles and might have grabbed a cup like this with your greasy hands and picked it and took a drink out of it, set it down, and it's got grease all on the outside. But would you drink out of that cup again? Sure. Why? Well, one, you're probably not grabbing the top with your greasy hands, but two, you know it's clean inside. It has something to it to be clean inside. There's something about that. I recently read about a man. He was a Christian apologist that died, known around the world for his intellectual ability to converse with people about Christ, his ability to just make sense of things, to convince people of all kinds of things about it. Just wonderful when it came to arguing and trying to persuade people as to the Christian belief. Well, the man passed away. And at his funeral, there were all kinds of dignitaries there. There was even a vice president of the United States attended his funeral and made comments about what a great man this was for the Lord. But then time kept going, and I don't remember the exact time frame. It may have been a couple of years or so. But after he had passed, accusations started coming out about that man's life. He hadn't been faithful to his wife. He hadn't handled himself well regarding other women. And at first, there was some confusion. The folks were like, no, this couldn't be the man we knew. But as they considered, about 10 years before this man had passed away, if I remember the timeline right, there was a woman that had accused him of being improper. And his board of his ministry had sat down, talked to him about it. And at the time, the man put on a, I guess you would call it a good front, and said, well, she's just trying to make me look bad. There's nothing to the story. And so they said, okay, well, we'll put out a press release and basically say this is not true. But they never really investigated it in depth. They just kind of took his word for it. Well, afterwards, after he had died and more of these things are coming up, the organization went and hired an outside firm, a law firm, to do some digging. And what they found out was this gentleman had been unfaithful. The one woman that they had took his side on had been telling the truth. Come to find out, the man had owned quite a few, from what I understand, massage parlors all around the world. And would go to these places and not do things he should be doing there. And it caused the board to have to back up and say, wait a minute. This has been going on for years. While this man could stand up and argue so intellectually for why you needed to believe in Christ. could just seem to be able to refute or handle any argument that you brought against the Bible. He could refute it. Now what's sad is, what do you think this has done to his legacy? To his reputation? I can tell you what happened was, once his organization found out, they started trying to do everything they could to distance themselves from him. They changed their name, took his name off. But there were other businesses, there were bookstores that said, we're not going to carry his books anymore. There were people that had worked with him under this ministry that, because they were trained up under him, they've been told by other places, we don't want you speaking because you've been affiliated with this man. One of his close associates told a reporter in an interview, he said, I am so disappointed that this man was a fraud and a liar. And it's such a challenge. This man looked good on the outside. And if you listen to his thoughts, the way he presented things, you would think this man is, he's clean through and through. But he wasn't. And because he wasn't clean through and through, just about anything he said will be challenged by somebody that's now looking at the words he uttered. You know, if he would have taken a different tact back when he was first accused by that one young woman before he died, if he would have went to his board in his ministry and said, folks, I've got a problem. And I need help. I need y'all to pray with me. I need the Lord to fix something. His legacy might be different. But because he didn't do that, there is no legacy for him when it comes towards Christ. With that kind of as a backdrop, let's start off looking in Matthew. Matthew chapter 23, starting in verse 25. Matthew 23, 25. This is Jesus speaking. He said, woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you make clean the outside of the cup and of the platter, but within they are full of extortion and excess. Thou blind Pharisee, cleanse first that which was within the cup and platter, that the outside of them may be clean. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye are like unto whited sepulchres, which indeed appear beautiful outward, but are within full of dead men's bones and of all uncleanness. Even so, ye also outwardly appear righteous unto men, but within ye are full of hypocrisy and iniquity. Now, Jesus is saying here, Pharisees, you've been the teachers of the day. In our world and time now, it would be like saying, ministers and Sunday school teachers and leaders of the church, you haven't been living right. You haven't been taking care of something inside. You've been allowing things to linger inside. That's causing problems. He compared them to graves, all cleaned up, whited, painted. But why were the sepulchers in their day painted white? Why were they cleaned up? They were cleaned up and painted white, not to be pretty, but to remind everyone that they were actually unclean. That they were full of dead men's bones. Under the old law, if you walked over a grave or touched a grave, you were considered unclean. So they wanted to mark that off. They wanted to put a delineation. This is not right. Do you know there's many professing Christians that live this way? They have a whitewashed life. And when you say, well, what do you mean they have a whitewashed life? Well, people will profess, I'm living right. I'm following the Lord. And I'm so glad that His grace covers the sins that I can't help do today. And they whitewash it. Big old whitewash across it. What are they saying? This is wrong. I know it's wrong. But I'm going to whitewash it so you all know it's wrong too. But do they actually change it? Do they actually clean it up? No. They just excuse it. Put more whitewash on it. Talk about all the good they do, all the externals they do. Well, I gave to the poor. I've done this. I've gone on mission trips. I've dug wells in foreign countries for folks that needed water. I've gone to the prison ministries and on and on. But inside, where are they? The Pharisees of the day, back in Jesus' day, they were looked at the time as the righteous people, the people that had it the right way to go. And what is Jesus saying about those folks? You're missing something. You don't have it right. You're prettying up the outside, but you're not taking care of what's most important. Now, for the folks that seem to act like you can't fix some of the things inside of you, why can't you? Why can't we fix that? So let's turn over to Luke chapter 11. Luke chapter 11, starting in verse 39. Once again, this is Jesus speaking. And the Lord said unto him, Now do ye Pharisees make clean the outside of the cup and the platter, but your inward part is full of ravening and wickedness. Ye fools, did not he that made that which is without make that which is within also? But rather give alms of such things as ye have, and behold, all things are clean unto you. But woe unto you Pharisees, for ye tithe mint and rue and all manner of herbs, and pass over judgment and the love of God. These ought ye to have done, and not to leave the other undone. Woe unto you, Pharisees, for ye love the uppermost seats in the synagogues and greetings in the markets. Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye are as graves which appear not, and the men that walk over thee are not aware of them. So here we see once again Christ talking about cleaning the inside. This was important to Jesus, not to just fix the outside, but fix the inside, to have it complete. And he asked them, there in verse 40, ye fools, did not he that made that which is without make that which was within also? He's asking them, don't you understand? You can be clean inside too. You don't have to act like this can't happen. You can. God can work in the inside too. You know, he talked to the Pharisees about they gave tithes of all kinds of things, mints and herbs and the littlest part of their herb gardens. But what did they walk past? Judgment and love is what he said. Now I've kind of had to chuckle because sometimes, and I'm speaking about professing Christians here, sometimes when you talk to Christians, it's almost like that when it talks about judgment and love, they think, okay, well, that's for me to judge people and God to love them. You ever ran into people like that? When it comes to how you deal with others, they tend to be very harsh, very direct. You're not living right. You're not living right. You're not doing this. You're not doing that. But God loves you. You know, God wants us to look at his judgment towards us and his love towards us first, so we can better understand how he can work with men. What did he say to the folks that was bringing the woman to him accused of adultery? What did he say to that crowd? Let you that's without sin cast the first stone. What did he ask him to do? To review her life? No. Jesus said, turn your eyes into yourself first. And once you turn your eyes into yourself, and you've studied that for quite a while, feel free to pick up a rock. Feel free to go ahead and throw it. What was the outcome of the men that turned their eyes inward? Apparently, whatever they saw was bad enough, they didn't feel like they needed to judge that woman anymore. And they left. It said, starting from the greatest all the way down to the least. They walked away. Why? They had turned their eyes properly for a change to what the Lord was trying to get them to see. You want to judge this lady? Okay. Consider yourself first. Look deep to see what you have. And one thing that stands out this time is the comparison of the grave. What did Jesus say about the graves this time? Did he say they were whited and painted up and everybody could see them? No. This time he said there in verse 44, "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites! For ye are as graves which appear not, and the men that walk over them are not aware of them. Do you know this time he was referring to people that have done a good job of trying to live right, trying to hit all the rules. And from an external appearance, they look good. This man I told you about externally to everybody around him looked good. To the point that when accusations were made, they just struggled to really do anything about it. Because this is the man we followed. His life is as far as we can tell, so good. And his intellectual arguments, the way he presents himself when he's defending Christ, surely this man wouldn't have done those things. And so they didn't investigate. Do you know we can get caught up in externals? We can. You know, Peter, let's turn to Acts chapter 10, verses 34 and 35. So Peter, we know, was eventually sent to Cornelius' house. Now, who was Cornelius if we stop for a moment and think about Cornelius? Cornelius was a Gentile. Unclean. The Jews tried not to have anything to do with the Gentiles. It would be like touching one of those whited graves. You'd be unclean. This is not proper. Well, the Lord had sent an angel to talk to, or a vision to talk to Cornelius, and said, okay, I have saw your alms, and I want you to go over here to this place and go into this house, and there's a man named Peter, and you need to tell him to come because he's got something for you. Now, what was happening to Peter? Peter's also getting a vision. And in his vision, a sheet's been let down full of all kinds of unclean animals. And he's being told, eat. And his reaction is, Lord, I've never ate of anything unclean. Not doing it. And the response was, don't call unclean what I've cleaned. And that happened three times to Peter, and he woke up and he's pondering it, trying to figure out what's going on. Isn't it funny how the Lord works? A knock on the door. A servant of the Gentile. My master has been told by an angel to come to this house and ask for Peter, that the Lord has something for us. And the Lord told Peter, go with him. Don't worry about it. I know he's a Gentile. Go with him. Don't look on the outside, Peter. That's not where you need to be concentrating. So now let's read Acts 10, verses 34 and 35. This is after Peter has talked to them. And then Peter opened his mouth and said, of a truth, I perceive that God is no respecter of persons. But in every nation, he that feareth him and worketh righteousness is accepted with him. Now that's a big thing for a Jew to say. And I realize now that you Gentiles are just as accepted of God as I am. Was it because of their externals? Do you think they'd put on the robes of the Israelites with the little blue trim that was from back in the Old Testament? The fringe? No. It was what was inside. So let's look at James. James chapter 2, starting in verse 1. My brethren, have not the faith of your Lord Jesus Christ, the Lord of glory, with respect of persons. For if there come unto your assembly a man with a gold ring and goodly apparel, and there come in also a poor man in vile raiment, and ye have respect to him that weareth the gay clothing, and saith unto him, sit thou here in a good place, and say to the poor, stand thou there, or sit here under my footstool, are ye not then partial in yourselves, and are become judges of evil thoughts? Now, in this word assembly here, this is not really referring to people coming into church service. This is actually referring to an assembly generally where folks are going to be asked to judge something. So there's two people, they're coming before you, you've got an assembly, and you're going to have to judge between these two men. One walks in and he's dressed very nice. Maybe he's well thought of in the community, always gave well to the church, helps the neighbors around him. Rich man. Comes in and you bring him in and you set him in a chair. The other man shows up, barely getting there in time, comes straight out of his field because he's a poor man. He doesn't have the luxury of not working his field, so he worked in his field as late as possible till he could just leave his field to get to the assembly on time. Now he's here, he's sweaty, dirty, dusty, smelly, and as soon as this thing's over, he's going to have to get back to his field to work because, once again, he's a poor man. He doesn't have the luxury of time like the rich man had to get cleaned up. And you invite him in and you say, well, if you don't mind, just stand over here. Why? Well, you're kind of dirty and smelly and we'd like to keep the chairs clean. In fact, actually, if you don't mind, we're going to go bring a little rug in over here to have you stand on the rug just in case you drip sweat or something on the floor. We'd really like to keep the place clean. Are you being partial to people at that point because of their externalities? There in verse 4 it says, are ye not then partial in yourselves and are become judges of evil thoughts? Now this doesn't mean you're able to judge evil thoughts. This means that you as a judge are now having evil thoughts. You as a judge have just allowed your thinking to become perverted. How are you then going to judge between these two men if you've already set such a distinction between them based on the externals? How would you defend yourself before God if he were sitting there asking you, well, how are you judging between these two men? So now let's drop on down to verse 8 there in the same second chapter. Verse 8, starting there, it says, if ye fulfill the royal law according to the scriptures, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself, ye do well. But if ye have respect to persons, ye commit sin, and are convinced of the law as transgressors. For whosoever shall keep the whole law and yet offend in one point, he is guilty of all. For he that said, do not commit adultery, said also, do not kill. Now if thou commit no adultery, yet if thou kill, thou art become a transgressor of the law. So speak ye and so do, as they that shall be judged by the law of liberty. For he shall have judgment without mercy that hath showed no mercy, and mercy rejoiceth against judgment. Now we see here that it goes on to say, how are you supposed to be looking at men? And it refers to the royal law. Now, wasn't this one of the two greatest commandments that Jesus spoke about? The first one being to love God with everything you had. The second one, to love your neighbor as yourself. If you're loving your neighbor as yourself, are your eyes going to be only on your neighbor, or are they also going to be considering how I am? How would I feel? Where do I stand? How would I treat my neighbor as myself? Do you realize there's a looking inward at that point in time? A consideration, kind of like those that were suddenly asked by Jesus with the adulterous woman, consider yourself first. And then feel free to treat the woman accordingly. There's a lot to be said for cleaning up the inside. Now, I find it interesting here where he talks about being guilty of the law if you offend in one little piece. And it goes on to talk about adultery and murder. And even though you may have not committed murder or not committed adultery, but if you've committed the other one, you're guilty of the law. There was no sliding scale. So what does the law say about respecting persons? So in Leviticus 19 and 15, ye shall do no unrighteousness in judgment. Thou shalt not respect the person of the poor, nor honor the person of the mighty, but in righteousness shalt thou judge thy neighbor. In Deuteronomy chapter 1, verses 16 and 17, and I charged your judges at that time, saying, hear the causes between your brethren, and judge righteously between every man and his brother, and the stranger that is with him. Ye shall not respect persons in judgment, but ye shall hear the small as well as the great. Ye shall not be afraid of the face of man, for the judgment is God's. And the cause that is too hard for you, bring it unto me, and I will hear it. And also in Deuteronomy chapter 16, verse 19, thou shalt not wrest judgment, thou shalt not respect persons, neither take a gift. For a gift doth blind the eyes of the wise and pervert the words of the righteous. So we're supposed to be living our lives to not cross the law. But today, we live our lives to not cross Jesus' commands. Now back there, why did they not want people to defer and honor other men too much? You know, there's this thing, have you ever heard the term quid pro quo? I'm going to do for you and you'll do for me. You've ever helped somebody out? It's a lot easier to call that person when you need help, isn't it? Why? Well, you know, I've loaned that person a tool before. I'll see if they got something I can borrow. And there's nothing wrong with that. But we need to be careful with what our motivation is. Is it the love of our brother to help them out? This man that I talked about at the beginning, the people around him didn't want to challenge him. He had become so great in their eyes, they didn't feel like it was their place to challenge him when some of these accusations were brought up. Now, if he had been able to deal with those accusations while he was yet alive, there might be something else to his legacy than just the fact that he was a fraud and a liar, as one of the people called him. Because he would have had an opportunity to go to the folks and, hey, help me. Some of the simple investigations the folks could have taken, they just, you know who it is. Surely he wouldn't do that. And they didn't go look. They didn't go ask him, brother, that's really disturbing that somebody would say that. And I know you're saying that it's just being done to hurt you, to hurt the work. But that's a serious offense. We need to look at that. We need to look deeper. From what they're finding out when they did the investigation, it wouldn't have taken much of a look to discover the truth. That's why it came out after he was dead. It was all right there. But they had got caught up in the externals. They were a part of this man's ministry, and it was known around the world. And some of them got to worrying about, well, if this is true, what's it going to do to the ministry? Maybe can we hush it up? Can we keep it quiet? You can. You cannot clean the inside. And now his ministry is of no value at all because of what's came out. A man that was identified as basically being unclean on the inside, and because of that, some very good arguments for Christianity are potentially tainted if it ever comes out that, well, I got that from this man. and from the things he taught. Because they'll be like, well, from him? You heard the story about him, right? How for 10, 20 years he misbehaved. What a tragedy. 2 Timothy 2:15. Study to show thyself approved unto who? God. You know, folks, we are to help each other out. We are to help each other. There, it says, iron sharpeneth iron, so a man his friend. We are to help each other out. But at the end of the day, we need to be looking to see if we're standing right before the Lord. I could put on a show. Many a man has done it. And get up here, study the word, be able to preach technically from it, have all kinds of arguments, and have nothing in here. And what good would it do me? You all say, well, Brother Eric looks pretty good. Looks like he's got it together. But then we get to judgment. Everybody's, I'm going to say, kind of crowding in through the golden gate. And everybody's like, well, where's Brother Eric? I don't see him. Back over there wailing in the darkness. Why? I ignored the inside. I was more focused on how I stood or how people around me thought I stood and just wanting to keep it all together, wanting to do the right thing so they would approve of me. But in doing so, I forgot to ask Jesus and ask God, how do you see me? Where am I at? Adam Clark, when he was talking about comments on one of the things about the different types of spiritual meat, he said, each man should be fed his portion of spiritual meat in due season. Milk to babes, strong meat to the full grown, comfort to the disconsolate, reproof to the irregular and careless. Now, if you think about that, milk to a babe, which one of you would take a steak, cube it up, and then take one of those cubes of steak and try to feed it to a 2 or 3 week old baby? Nobody would. Why? The baby don't even have teeth yet. It can't chew it. It can't, I mean, it might be able to, I guess, suck on it long enough to maybe eventually get it to go down without choking it. But it is not ready for that. But let some years go by and people would be happy to feed the child some meat. Give them some strength. They need it. But then what happens if you get ill? When you get ill, do you always keep eating the same food you ate when you were strong? You ever had your stomach get upset and sometimes you're like, you know what? I normally would eat that, but I have to eat something different for a while. Why? Something's not right inside. Something inside me needs taken care of. Is it easily visible on the outside? Not always. You know, we can pretend to be in circumstances that we aren't. We can pretend to be in a good spot and not be. But if we're partaking of things as if we're in a different place, we could actually be harming ourselves. There's been studies done on folks that eat food really fast. One of the most obvious things that happens is your body doesn't have time to tell you you're full. And how many people have ended up at the end of a meal where you're like, oh, and then your stomach hurts all night and you sleep miserable. Why? You weren't careful with how you ate. Do you know there's other things that come with not being careful how you eat? That same study they looked at said there's an increase in obesity, an increase of heart disease, diabetes, all kinds of things just because you eat fast. Because we're not taking care of the inside. I want to challenge all of us. Sometimes we can look around us and we can say, how's this person doing? How's that person doing? And, well, how do they think I'm doing? But at the end of the day, we need to be stepping back and saying, Lord, where am I before you? I think about myself, think about all kinds of people. Have we ever had people that's been up in the ministry that's failed, even in our church? What happened? Where did things go wrong? At some point, the inside stopped being cared for. I would challenge all of us. Let's stay aware of where we're at with the Lord. Work to have Him truly guide us. It's not that we need to ignore the outside. Kind of like Jesus told the Pharisees, you know, it wasn't that they shouldn't tithe of the little things, but He said you need to take care of the important things. It's good that you're doing those little things. They have their place. But we need to clean the inside so that the cup is usable. Because as the cup becomes usable, I don't know if any of y'all have ever, speaking from my childhood, have you ever been assigned the chores to do dishes? And you go into the kitchen and you see the pot of lasagna or something, everything baked on and hard on the bottom of the pan. And the thought comes to your mind, you know what? I'm just going to put that on to soak. That's a lot of work to get that off. So that's what you do. You put some soap and water in, you put it in there, and when your mother asks, you got the dishes done? Yep, got the dishes done. Then later on that night, she comes in your room. How come the lasagna pan's not washed? Oh, I'm letting it soak. Okay, well, it's soft now. Time to get up and go finish it. What had been my plan? Well, if I let it soak, whoever does dishes tomorrow gets that one. But no, I had to deal with it. We need to deal with the things that the Lord wants us to deal with so that we're clean on the inside, useful for everyone. Y'all pray for me.